بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Let's look at that letter of the Imam. Because we mention it and we go past the letter, but we don't actually deeply investigate as to what the letter says. And I think it's important for us to look at what the letter says. And honestly, the first line is a mind blower. What does Imam say to Malik al-Ashtar? Blows your mind away. He says, Malik, I'm sending you. Remember one thing. You're accountable to the people. Is basically the sum of what he says. Scrutiny. Remember, you are up for scrutiny. Why? Because there have been just rulers there. There have been unjust rulers there. In the same way as you've criticized rulers, people are now going to criticize you as well. Be very careful. That's our political system. Other than Imam Ma'sum, who only Allah sees, even when the Imam appoints somebody like Malik, he puts a qaid, and that qaid is that you are accountable to the people. Why? To prevent megalomania, dictatorial rule, or otherwise. This tells us that if Amir al-Mu'mineen's chosen person is accountable to the people, that means that it's important for all people who are within power in the time of the occultation of the Imam to be accountable to the people. And this is why the Imam says, make sure that whatever decision you make, give the logical reasoning to the people so they understand why you're making it. And again, I think that this is extremely important. The ulama of the past would do that. I'm sure the ulama present do that as well. But specifically the past. This is why you have volumes of reasons why a person makes a decision. To understand one's power and to use it in the correct way is important. To take counsel. So he says that. That's a very powerful statement. I've picked you, right? Let's say Amir al-Mu'mineen's picked a person, but you're accountable. Be careful what you do. Make sure it's open. Make sure there's transparency. You will be scrutinized. It doesn't turn around and say, you're a dictator, you can do whatever you want. I've chosen you. Finished. Doesn't say that. There's a huge emphasis on the people. In a community, therefore, any community leader will require, however apt you are. Imam says, yes, you have to be apt, you have to be knowledgeable, you have to be wise, you have to have taqwa, all of these things. But at the end of the day, the buck goes with the people, and the people need to be intelligent enough to make that decision. There's a hadith that Sunnis have narrated, and it's quite a phenomenal one, actually, for them to narrate it, when they're giving the sharh on the Nahj al-Balagha, where the Imam says, or where the Prophet says to the Imam, yes, you are apt to rule, you should be the Khalifa, but if the people don't respond to you, then just leave them. Leave them on their own heart. Just let them. You go to yourself. That's a powerful statement. You see the very same thing, and this goes community as well. If community, you cannot force the community. The people have to evolve themselves. Why isn't the 12th Imam present with us? Because of the fact that he's waiting for our intellects to evolve. The purpose of an Islamic system is not to demolish previous systems. It's to develop on systems. That's an important point, by the way. This is the entire point of revolution. What does revolution mean? Revolution comes from revolve. Revolve means to change the heart. Here, revolving the heart. Inqalab, what does it mean? Qalb, rotation of the heart. True revolution is from the heart. Starts off the change. If you go for a physical uprising, which is happening in Egypt and Libya today, for example, what does it produce? Nothing. If the heart isn't changed, they will go back to tyranny again, and they've already gone back to tyranny again. Look at Libya today. What did President Obama say? The biggest mistake we've made, Libya. A colleague of mine, Arif Nayed, was the person who was meant to take the prime minister or become head of Libya, right? He was the one who was chosen. He himself backed down. Who said, it's suicide. Going to Libya, I'm going to come out dead. Sufi leader, or the largest tribe in Libya, extremely wealthy, extremely influential. He was meant to be the man in there, and he's still sitting in Dubai. Why? Allah plans, and we plan. But the fact was, it was based upon tyranny. Uprising. Gaddafi wasn't a nice guy. But everything else that took place, and this is why the Imam says to Malik at the end, he goes, prevent bloodshed. At all costs, prevent bloodshed. Do not cause bloodshed, do not take lives, make sure spilling of blood is stopped. Because spilling of blood has side effects. All about, you know, they say, for example, is awarith. They say there's the side effects to spilling of blood. And that spilling of blood has a huge detrimental problem. Entire systems can be overturned just by that. Spilling of blood. If a person has a lot of blood on their hands, believe me, you will see them pay. You will see those systems go into depreciation, decline. And Imam says to Malik, regardless of who, what, how, be forgiving. And don't ever doubt in the fact that why was I forgiving? And don't ever feel that, oh, I shouldn't have been forgiving. No, feel happy. You forgiven? Forgiven. And don't feel happy when you do retribution, when you take someone for retribution. If you pass a punishment, do not feel happy by that. Why? Because it desensitizes us from empathy. And Imam is teaching empathy. That is important for any family, for any community, for any society, for any state, or for any leadership position. You must be empathetic to us as a people. You must see from the eyes of the people, you must feel the pain of the other people, and the only way this can come, Imam will explain it later on, is that one of the ways of silence. Listen more, speak less, learn to feel the pain of other people, empathize with other people, sit with other people. This is why the Imams are sit with the poor, don't sit with the rich. It's possible you may become haughty, may become greedy. Make sure you're sitting with people who are oppressed, make sure you're sitting with people who are underprivileged, make sure you're sitting with people who don't have rights. Give them rights, empower people, empathize. Otherwise, politics, leadership, all of these things is a dirty game. You see, people become desensitized very quickly. 10 years in a business, not even 10 years, within 5 years, you know. If they go on for another 5 years, they become dictators.
Say, I don't know if you mind us stopping you and asking a question.
Yeah, sure.
Or if you want to leave it till the end.
It's up to you, whatever system works for you.
Just on this point about mercy, the government, obviously you want the rulers to be merciful to these people, but where those people are out of line, you need to impose the law.
Yes.
So where is the line?
So again, there's two different things. As we said, what justice has is compassion. Compassion on particular people requires justice. You see, it's what we call about love. When you talk about absolute love, the reason why we mix justice with love is because of the fact that if you're loving to just everyone in the context that we say loving is, what happens necessarily? There's no rule of law then. To be compassionate sometimes to be harsh. You as a parent, your child is about to put his hand in the fire. You know I'm going to have to grab him and pull him. That grabbing and pulling him is going to cause him harm as well because he's young. And when you pull him back, it's possible that the clothes may stick to his neck or something like that. It causes him minute pain, could even cause bruising. But you know that bruising is for a reason. What did Imam say to Aqil? Right? Which is narrated within Sunni traditions. You know, we don't have similar like that. But he says to Aqil, comes and goes, look, I'm poor. And he comes to next to the fire. And the entire dialogue of Aqil is there. It's his brother. He loves him. He has compassion. But he knows, if my brother goes down this route, the outcome is that. And some people will say that Aqil was only doing it to expose Muawiyah, because the other part of the story is he goes to Muawiyah. And Muawiyah is happy. He says, you know, Aqil, let me give you the money, man. Here's everything you wanted. And Aqil then turns around. And, you know, they says that, look, Ali's friends leave him. And he says, it's not the fact Ali's friends leave him. He says, I saw Ali's integrity. And I'm seeing your integrity. And you don't have integrity. You just given me money, which was not yours. He said, I don't want your money. Thank you. And he walks off. So, it's exposed him. Ali is even just when it comes to his own family. And that's part of compassion as well. Because if I care about someone, sometimes I have to be harsh to be. That comes under Amr bil Ma'aruf sometimes. And this is why it says that two types of people essentially are immune. And they will have good in this world and the hereafter. One who does Amr bil Ma'aruf, and one who is open for it to be done on them. Right? The same way, the same process applies as well to forbidding of evil. You do that and you're open to it happening to you. Then the final part of the hadith that Amir al-Mu'mineen gives, he says, and the person stays within the hudud, stays within the jurisdiction of the law that Allah has put forward. Because there's benefit to that. But anyhow. coming back to first thing of the letter is this. He says, look, be very careful that you're going to be scrutinized. Do good deeds. And there's a third point that he mentions that blew my mind. Because the Imam doesn't say anything. Doesn't say anything without there being a hikmah behind it. You know what he says? He says, that which has been prohibited or what you have prohibited, apply it on yourself. Because of this, your basira will increase. Your decision-making power, you'll make the right decisions. And I sat back and I thought, hang on a minute. Imam is making a correlation between stopping that which is the muharramat, to stop that which Allah has prohibited or you're prohibiting, i.e. to make sure that you're in line with the hukum of Allah. Through that way, your basira or your insight or your what one would say, your decisions will become more powerful. This is why they say a person who applies what they know, what happens to that person? That person will surely be guided by Allah. And they will have an impact as well. You see, you find two types of people. Even on the member today, you go and see, you find that alim or that scholar, he'll talk about all of these, you should do this, you should do this, you shouldn't do that. Has no impact on the people. You come out, wow, amazing lecture, wow. But what happens? No impact, no one changes. And you find a person who goes up there and he says, lying is bad. And it brings tears to your eyes. And it's happened. So you think, actually, you know what? He's right. Has an impact. Respect your mothers. Has an impact. You think, yeah, you know what is right. Why? He's not an eloquent speaker. He's not that good. He's not that famous. But he says, respect your mothers. And you think to yourself, yeah, you know what? He's saying the right thing. Why? Alim al-Rabbani. Person who applies what they know, follows the laws of God, they have an effect. There's an asar on there's an effect on their tongue. It hits the heart of the other person. And that's what's required to be a good leader. Change. Because in a family, we have leaders. Sometimes the youngest son or the daughter can be a leader. Because they have, remember what the definition was, the idea of influencing somebody else. And they can influence somebody else. So the influence is there. Then the Imam says, and remember, either your brother is equal in faith or equal in humanity. And it comes after all of that. After teaching, apply the laws. Make sure that you're applying. At the same time, in fact, before that he says something as well. He says, and develop love for the other person. Develop love for them. Before he says equal in faith and humanity, he says develop love for your people. In a community, one must love people. To love somebody is to remove your grudges, is to remove your negativities, and then you love somebody. And when you love somebody, you want good for them. And we don't see that in this day and age. Even sibling rivalries destroy communities. Love is gone. Your ideology may not match to your brother's ideology, you start fighting. No. It is not arguments that change hearts. It is compassion that changes hearts. Had it been arguments, the Imam would have used all of those arguments. You know, think back and remember, look at what the Imam, people were chucking rubbish on him, people were abusing him, his people, some of them, you know, there's phenomenal tradition, right? A person comes to the Imam and he looks at the Imam. Here's a man whose beard is white, back is bent, has a sack on his back. Visualize it. We're meant to follow that. This man, he was a man, he had pain. And the person says to him, he says, Mawla, you know this food that you distribute at night time? Do you distribute it to your enemies as well? You know what he replied? He says that my friends come to me. My enemies don't. I'm taking this to my enemies. You know, that's a man who loves and he cares about people. Take the principle of that. You know, here's a man who's in pain. Here's a man who's suffering. You know, there was a time in the Battle of Siffin when they asked him, why don't you colour your beard? He says, don't you know, I'm still in mourning. 25 years later, he's mourning for his wife. That's personal pain, right? That's personal grief. But he's able to put that personal grief to one side for the betterment of the community. That's an imam. You know, Fatah Mirza's gone. You look at some of the traditions. This shows the human side of the imam, where he puts his wife in the grave. 7 times he tries to get up and he collapses. His knees give way, he can't physically get up. Gets up, falls down again. Gets up, falls down again. And the tradition says he looks up out of the grave. His son is standing there and he doesn't want to make eye contact with his son. Because obviously as a father you don't want to look weak. Or whatever it may be, he doesn't make eye contact with one son. He doesn't make eye contact with his second son. Now the hadith says, understand the human side of the imam. From inside of his chest, a voice comes, he says something. When he doesn't want to make eye contact with his children, and he doesn't want to make eye contact with his companions, when he can't get out, he just says one thing. He says, Zainab, come and help your father. And she comes running to help her father. Only his daughter was sufficient enough to help. You know, you see that? That's the human side of the imam. So these things one needs to remember. It's not an easy life either for the imam. It's quite painful. Within that pain and suffering that the imam had, look at the way that he's dealing with people. This is why it personifies the words of the imam even more. If it was easy and his wife was there and there was no attack on him and there was nothing like... It's very easy to say words of advice and wisdom and so forth when you're not in a situation yourself. But when you're in a difficult situation, then to do the right thing is difficult. So that's the biggest lesson. Look into your own household. But I had a bad day at work. And I'm going to take it out on my wife. Hey, Imam, trust me. You know what he would say? I say salam and then they don't reply to me. You can't have a worse day than that. Salman comes to him. You know, he could have reacted to Salman. He doesn't. 3 days had gone by. Salman comes. He says, Mawla, we've been waiting for you in the masjid. Now, if you can imagine this, imagine this. Imam is sitting on the floor. He has one head of one child on one knee. He has the other head of another child on the other knee. He has Zainab in his hands, in his arms. Has Umm Kulthum in the other. Salman comes. He says, Mawla, we've been waiting for you. Well, he replies. He says, Salman, ever since Zahra has died, I've become a mother and a father to these kids. If you want me to put them to one side and to come, I'll come. He stands up to go out. And then he comes to the door. And he sees the broken door and he begins to cry. He says, Salman, is this what you wanted me to see? But within that, and within that grief and within that pain, Imam comes forward and he delivers some of the most meticulous words, pearls of wisdom. That's what defines him. It wasn't easy. Leadership is not easy. Bringing change is not easy. Being good is not easy. Walking in the way of God is not always easy. It's easy for a person who is firm on the pathway, but a person who's visiting, as a friend of mine would say, it's not easy for them. Sayyid al-Shuhada wasn't a visitor. He was at peace. You know why? The one statement of the Imam just destroys everything. Somebody asked him, Imam, everything has gone in front of you. How can you still bear this? You know what he replies? He says, because Allah is watching, that's why. Give solace on my heart that I know Allah is watching. It's a powerful statement. All of these burdens, your son was killed, Allah was watching. Your brother was killed, Allah's watching. When you have that much yaqeen that Allah is watching, then it makes no difference. Whatever you're going through becomes easier because you know Allah is watching. It's the most powerful, right? It's the one who can change everything. Why do you go to another door when the door of God is open? Allah, this oppression was done upon me. Allah is watching. And these are some of the lessons that we need to understand. How did the Imam's life become so easy for them? Even within the pain, even within the 14 years in jail, solitary confinement, poisoning, Allah's watching. That's it. My Creator, the one who's powerful over all of. So, now that the Imam says, your brother in faith or humanity, he comes to the next point. He says, one must be forgiving. Do you see how he's emphasizing it? Love, forgiveness. Nothing harsh at this moment in time. His primary points to the individual when it comes to interaction and relationships with other people is what? Love, forgiveness, empathy. And remember, you're under scrutiny, son. All of these things are there. And then he says, even then, he's not finished yet. When you've developed all of those things, respect the rights of God and the people, otherwise you'll find both of them will become your enemies. Respect the right of the people, respect the right. Don't become a megalomaniac. Be very careful. Then the Imam says, and this is people for your communities. You're going to go into your communities tomorrow. You're going to have situations tomorrow. You're going to have problems tomorrow. You will do, because it's natural. We all have problems. Here the Imam says, he says, listen, do not deal with certain people. Do not go to certain people. Do not confide in certain people. What types of people? He says, number one type of people, stay away from those who are weak. Not physically weak, but in terms of belief or so forth. Why? What will they do? They'll make you weak. Stay away from people who will bring out your weaknesses, essentially. And that's a psychological thing. Always go to people who make you stronger, in a sense. Yes, there's one thing pointing out your mistakes, the other thing is to make you weak. But when you take counsel of a person and you say, give me constructive criticism, the idea is not to destroy a person. The idea is to point out their weaknesses to make it their strengths. When somebody comes to you for advice, and you know this guy is completely, don't destroy him. Make sure that you give him constructive criticism in a way that he leaves thinking, yes, now I can become a better person. And that's not for everyone. Therefore, not everyone can advise and give constructive criticism. This way, you've not been told to go to everyone for constructive criticism. Go to the one who you know has wisdom in the way that he understands you and he can bring out the best in you. That's a leader. There's certain six qualities of a leader. One of those qualities is that he's able to bring out, make your weakness into strengths. Where does change come from? How do you become a better person? You don't become a better person by positive qualities. You become a better person when you understand your negative qualities and you're able to change them. You're positive, man. You pray on time. It's when you can take the negative qualities and make them your positive. That's where change comes. That's where a person is defined. Then he says, hide people's weaknesses so God will hide your weaknesses. I've seen that, honestly. You know, I remember I was at university, right? It's just a bit off the record, but it comes in the example, isn't it? There's a guy who did everything haram under the sun. From the community, everything. He was in every nightclub. I think to myself, you know, what the hell, this guy? Never got caught. One of the other brothers, one time in his life, decides to, you know, spotted with a sister, and that's it, everybody finds out. I said, man, you've been with 100 different sisters. You've never been spotted. What's the story? And he replied, funnily enough, he goes, I read the words of the Amir. Hide people's sins? Allah will hide your sins. He goes, I believe in that. Because I've done so many sins, Allah's never exposed one of them. But I wouldn't advise you to do that. but the main thing is this. There's a philosophy behind that. Allah's what? Sattar al-Uyub. Hide people's aib, and you will see Allah hides yours. You don't need to, and this is, you'll see the words of the Emir later on, because I had a lot of extensive stuff planned out. One of them was that Amir says to, so he quotes from Musa. If I can find it, I'll quickly tell you right now, actually. Says to Musa, Yes. It says hide the sins of people until you yourself are not free from that.
Sorry, can you repeat that?
It says hide people. So he says basically he's advising, this is Musa, until you haven't yourself been guaranteed that all of your sins are forgiven, hide the sins of others. Imam is narrating this from Musa. So second thing is when Allah spoke to Musa, second thing is said, he said, and until you haven't reached the end of the bounties of Allah, then do not get upset when it comes to rizq. If you don't have enough money, don't get upset. Because you haven't seen the end of the bounties. If you've seen the end of the bounties of Allah, then get upset. But if you haven't seen the end of the bounties of Allah, then don't get upset. Allah's doors. Third point, he says, until you haven't reached the end of my kingdom, Allah says to Musa, until you haven't reached the end of my kingdom, don't put your hope in anybody else. But if you have reached the end of my kingdom, then you can put hope in somebody else. It was like one of the sheikhs once said, he went to a country, the president of that country came to him and they said to him, Sheikh, whatever you want, I'm willing to give you. You know the sheikh replied? He said, when Allah's bounties close, then I'll come to you definitely. Until then, I'm okay. So, fourth thing he says, until you are not certain of Shaitan's death, then don't feel secure that you'll be immune from his treachery. So, 4 points that Imam narrates. Imam narrates these 4 points, he brings them forward, and he says what? Firstly, until you yourself are not guaranteed of your sins forgiven, don't look at the aib of other people. Until you haven't reached the end of my bounties, as in God's bounties, don't get upset over rizq. Until you haven't reached the end of my kingdom, don't put faith in other people. Put your faith in me. And until you're not certain that Shaitan is dead, until that moment, don't feel immune from his treachery. But anyhow, so then the Imam continues forward. And this is a message for all of us. Whether it's in family, whether it's in a community. Twenty-seven minutes have gone. My God, gotta accelerate this. It's a very beautiful point, though. Imam is there. He resonates. Quran talks about it as well. It's from the ethos of the Quran. Write this down in gold. Put it in your room, and look at it every day. Imam says this. Verify information that comes to you from a third party. Do not straight away act upon that. Verify it. The majority of our problems, whether it's marital problems, and there's a lot of them in our community, divorces, all sorts, generally come from third parties. Verify things, remove misconception away, and make sure that you are clear yourself and the information that's being given to you. As a leader of a community, Imam is saying to his leaders, who the people who's training, verify, verify, verify. Don't straight away act on it. Make sure that you're verifying. Why? And then also then he says, and undo hatred or enmity which is between people. It's very important. The only time, or one of the three times you're allowed to lie, one of them is when you are undoing hatred amongst two people. For the time that you undo hatred from people, what happens? Allah removes your difficulty. So many traditions on this. You know, sometimes you're stuck in a trial or tribulation where you can't get out of it. Thinking, man, you know what, I'm so stuck. The best thing to do at that time is what? Aid your fellow brother. Specifically with these two people who are having conflict. Solve their conflict. Allah will remove your difficulty. Hadith on that. Look at Ahlul Bayt, man. Amazing the way that... The other guys, they don't have this. We have everything on a plate. We still don't research it. Every single aspect of your life is mentioned in the tradition. Believe me, these guys don't have anything, not even the crumb. And all the crumbs that they have as well is actually goes back to Amir al-Mu'mineen as well. Not even a crumb of what we have. So deep, meticulously with the way that Imams explain things. Then he says, don't take counsel from three types of people. Number one, the miser. In your communities, don't go to a miser. The coward or the greedy. Why? Because the miser and the coward will remove your trust in God. He gives the hikmah behind it. He gives the reasoning behind it. He says, listen, the coward and the greed and the miser, they will remove your trust from God. And then he continues and he says, but the worst person to take counsel from are those people who support unjust people. Do not ever go to a person who you know supports people who are unjust. Put yourself the yardstick, right? When we're in opposition, it's very easy for us to say all sorts of things. When we come into government and we fly back from London, then it becomes extremely important for us to be just. Corruption or injustice doesn't mean like becoming like Saddam or other people like that, or Gaddafi or Mubarak. Injustice can be on a micro level to another person as well. And remember, why do we have to be just? Because injustice is that thing that also has a ramification on our life. Every sin that you do, by the way, has an effect. And it makes your death painful. Moment of your death becomes painful. So be very careful and very vigilant in your justice. To give you a practical example, your wife and you are having an argument. Your brother straight away comes and supports you. That is an injustice. That in your life and on your death, you're accountable and your death will become painful. But I'm supporting my brother, but no, you don't know the truth. Inquire into the truth neutrally. Do not support an oppressor. It's possible that you may have oppressed your wife. And what you've done is supported. The case has come, right? The case comes. There's a guy who's Mu'tadayyin. This guy's a religious. But he's having a problem with his wife. Now, I want to trust. I know this guy's trustworthy. I want to trust him. But at the same time, I also know, until I do not hear the other side of the argument, regardless of who or how or what the woman is, for example, or the man is, I can't make a judgment. Sometimes you want to support the woman straight away, some man straight away. But no, hear both sides of the argument. That's why it's important. And that's an ethics that one needs to learn in families as well. Because the ramification is we isolate the other. Remember, when you get married, there are two families which are coming together, two people which are coming together. If we point blank continuously support our own, the other person will feel alienated and there will be problems between two families. So you remember back in the day, the clever ones used to straight away support the in-law, the sister-in-law. Why? Because at least she doesn't, or the brother-in-law, at least they don't feel isolated in the family. Because later on, there's a possibility, there's an imkan for change. So don't be like those people who straight away, no, my son can't do that. No, your son can do that, and he probably has done that, so be very careful. Everything changes, right? It's a different ball game. Your son, as long as he was with you, is like that, but now he's with another person. So, all of these things. Then the Imam says, he says that, but do a number of things. Do three things. First thing, be with those people who are habitually truthful. Here, truthful means, even when they're afraid of somebody, they're truthful. And even when they want something from someone, you know, for example, you go for an interview and then you're like, man, I might as well just lie, at least I get the job. So no, truthfulness is even then, because you've realized that God is Hakim. Even if you were to get the job, somewhere along the line there'd be an issue, and I've noticed that. You'd look at the pattern, somewhere there's a major issue and you think to yourself, oh man, I wish I'd just disclosed it or not. Always comes back to you, always comes back, remember that. Cannot hide anything. Second thing he says that be with those people who are God-fearing, God-conscious. Why? Because they will implement essentially God-consciousness within you, and at the same time, they will not flatter you. Remember, flattery makes you arrogant. They'll help you to remove your arrogance. They'll basically ground you. So, and these are one of the criteria, you know, try and look at a spouse who grounds you, not somebody who looks down upon you. There's a difference there. I'll give you an example. There's cases where, say for example, the sister comes and she says, you know, my husband, he lacks confidence. I want him to be outgoing, but he's not. And there's two ways you can deal with it. You can either tell him, get out there and become confident, which is not going to work because he's naturally inclined to become, he's not that of nature, right? So what do? The best way you do is that you help him develop his confidence through love, caring. So let's say you're outgoing, you yourself, but your spouse isn't outgoing. You work together and you help him to become outgoing or her to be outgoing by nurturing them. It takes time, it takes effort, but when you help someone develop through love, that's lasting and that cements your own relationship. If I turn around and say, man, you don't even drive, come on, for God's sake, you know, who's the woman in the, you know, for example, I've heard these things from different people's conversations and stuff. Or for example, you can't even cook, what kind of a woman are you? Okay, fine, you can cook 15, 20 dishes, because you're, what was that guy, Oliver, whatever his name is, Jamie Oliver. He could do that. Okay, your wife can't cook. It's not the way you don't put down. Why don't you do a joint exercise? Have we seen this in history? Yes. Where? Rasulullah. Rasulullah comes into the house. He sees Fatima alayhi salam and Amir al-Mu'mineen both in the kitchen and both helping one another clean the lentils and cook the food. And that's when Rasulullah starts on the fadail of Amir al-Mu'mineen and he ends on this point whereby he says, anyone who helps their wife in the house, the major sins are removed. Even though your wife doesn't need to, technically speaking, she doesn't need to cook, doesn't need to clean. If you look at the laws, she doesn't need to do anything. It's just her akhlaq that allows her to do that because she's of good akhlaq. So don't take it for granted. Other things we take it for granted that my wife has to cook for me. And your wife doesn't have to. If she turns around to you and says, you cook, she's got every right to say that. It's her akhlaq though, right? But at the same time, if you help one another, then that's even better. You help one another. And I'm not switching roles around. What I'm trying to say is that do exercises, and you'll hear that more in marriage courses and stuff. I'm not here, nor am I a specialist on marriage courses. But what I will say is that one thing is partnership. Develop by helping one another. And that's what's important, right? Especially in this day and age. That's how you build love, affection, openness, communication skills improve. All of these things improve when you're seen to be working together. It's important. Put projects together. Anyhow, so final point is do not treat good and bad alike. Good people or bad people, don't treat them alike. Make sure that what's good is good, what's bad is bad. If it's your own, if it's not your own, right? Then there's a couple of other headings which we find. One of them is in terms of classes. As in society which has different class groups. And the beautiful point is this, the sum of everything is this, that remember, each class, whether you're business class or working class or economy class or whatever you are, the whole plane is interlinked. You're a businessman, you know, for example, you're white collar, you're blue collar, whatever you may be, in an economy, in a society, all the classes are dependent on one another. The progress of one is the progress of another. And that needs to be observed. That needs to be bear in mind. We have to bear that in mind. Everything is interlinked. And then he develops on that. Now, he doesn't say that the poor needs to be like the rich. No. The idea is to remove poverty, right? And there's a particular hadith of the Imam where he gives 3,000 dirhams to one person. And he says, 1,000 for your medical expenditure, 1,000 for your education, and 1,000 for the alleviation of your poverty. That means that the Imam sees three things in a society to uphold that society. There are three fundamental things that need to be there. One, an NHS system. One, an education system. And one, a social services system to alleviate poverty. Why? Because immediately you need to alleviate poverty. Secondly, you have to be fit and healthy. But more importantly, education provides you with the tools to become a better person. Look at the basira of the Imam is phenomenal. It's like you're talking to somebody who, you know, is more apt than 21st century Western politicians. Breaks it. Imagine tomorrow if the Prime Minister came out and said, this is the money that we're giving, but you have to break it up into three. A third of it will go to your medical, a third of it will go to your education, and you must get down and educate yourself. I think Mama's saying this straight away. Goes three things. These are the three things that you need to do. So yes, I'm going to skip a couple of the stuff that I wanted to say, because we technically have 5 minutes. But what I will say is this. And he talks about trade, right? I don't know if you want to touch that. If you don't want to touch that, we can move on. Should we talk about trade?
Yeah.
He mentions 3 points in trade. He says, look, first and foremost, Malik, you're not going to get a problem with these guys. Because they know that if they start fighting or disrupting one another, their trade is going to start failing. But remember one thing. Make sure that they don't hoard wealth, hoard grain. Why? Hoarding, what does it mean? Waiting for that moment where there's a lack of supply and then you raise the price. He says, make sure severe punishment is there for that those type of people. And make sure you do away with their greed. And make sure that the prices are fixed in such a way that there's a mutual benefit for both buyer and seller. What does this lead to? It leads to a bolstering of the economy, essentially. Bolstering?
Anti-monopoly.
Anti-monopoly as well, yeah. Bolster it, and it bolsters the economy. It makes both... Okay, you may not be making huge amounts of money, but it ticks business. There's another couple of things that I was looking at yesterday. In fact, I haven't written it down, but I was looking at them. In terms of society, in terms of the way, again, when it comes to business, and I think it's exceptionally important that there's a whole ethics of business there, the way that the Imam is teaching us. The idea of the Imam is you need to benefit all of society. Make it easy for the rich to trade, yes. Make sure that their morale is there for the people who are entrepreneurs. But at the same time, also make sure that the poor are not suffering and their rights are being fulfilled as well. It's not a socialist or Marxist movement, by the way. Imam understands that certain people are rich, certain people are poor, but remember, the whole spectrum of people is required for any market to become successful. If I demoralize those entrepreneurs who are doing well, what happens? My community and society will suffer. You've got to be pragmatic. It is a Imam is talking about a capitalist system, but at the same time, he's not talking about one which is based solely on individuality or extreme form of greed. Because greed is not beneficial. Why? Remember, go back to the Nahj again. What does the Imam say? If you get a lot of money very fast, what? You are stepping on the rights of somebody else. And when the dhulm comes into play, then you find that things start going wrong. Barakah from your wealth is taken away. How many footballers and pop stars and otherwise have we seen who are Michael Jackson having a max 300 million dies bankrupt, for example? How do you blow 300 million? I don't know. How do people blow it? Have you not seen a person's £500 last longer than a person's £5,000? Barakah. Allah puts barakah in that money. How do you get that? Don't oppress. Give your khums. Give your dues. Give your zakat. Make sure what you're doing is above board. Ethics. Again, comes back. Your regular. Because otherwise it's easy for your ego to just go wild. And then he says something very beautiful. He says, when it comes to the oppressed people, periodically visit them. Visit them periodically. And let them speak in stern language. And be patient, because they have a lot to say. Obviously, they're oppressed. They're going to say stuff you're not going to like. Let them say it. And be patient and listen to them. Not only is this humbling, but it develops you as a person. You try that as well. You go to a person who's oppressed. You know, we try and avoid people like that because you know they're going to just offload. You go to somebody. If they're oppressed, go, you know, what is it? Let them offload. It develops you as a person. Why? Because in a majlis like that, the rahmah of Allah is upon you. And that rahmah becomes beneficial later on in other mechanics of your life. Because some chains which are broken in your own life get connected through the rahmah of Allah. Then the Imam says, and again, it's a phenomenal statement. He says, make peace. As in, not war. Make peace with your enemies. But don't be stupid about it. Remember, when you're making peace, it's possible that your enemy, because it's times of peace, he may try and get one upon you. Cunningness, like Ma'awiyah did. Don't become complacent. But at the same time, respect the covenants which you have signed, which you've agreed upon. And again, that's extremely important. Then he's, the last advice he says. Again, it's, I've taken snippets of it, so I'm just going to give you the last advice. Last advice he says is he says that be very careful when it comes to your anger. Keep a check on your anger. Control your tongue. And finally, do the best you can do. Allah doesn't want any more than that. Do the best you can do. Any more than that is not within your capacity. It's sufficient for you to do that. We're out of time, but I want to mention some traditions that Imam has mentioned socially. Okay, if I'm allowed to do that. It's coming up to four. If you give me 5 minutes, I'm just going to mention a couple of traditions. Because I found them phenomenal. All from the Imam. I found them phenomenal. First tradition is this. In fact, I've got 12 traditions. I'll give you as many as I can. Each one of these traditions, I can lecture on for 1 hour. Here the Imam says. He says, uphold three sunnahs. Sunnah of Allah, Sunnah of the Prophet, and Sunnah of the Awliya. Imam, what are these traditions? Number one, be like God who hides secrets. You will see a community develops well. Hide people's secrets. Hide it. People come as a become a confidant to people's secrets. Secondly, be like the prophets. How were they like? They tolerated the people. There was a tolerance there within them. We don't have tolerance anymore. Tolerate people. And how were the friends of Allah like? They were steadfast and they were forbearant when it came to trial and tribulation. Three qualities, put them inside of yourself. Who says that? Amir al-Mu'mineen. Now, in your social life, all of you this applies to. And it will apply from today onwards. How do you make a friend? What qualities should a friend have? Three qualities, Imam says. Firstly, in trial and tribulation, he's there to help you. If he doesn't help you, he's not your friend. Secondly, he protects you behind your back. He doesn't sit there when people are doing riba and he listens. And then he comes to you and tells you, by the way, you know what people are doing riba. You know, he supports you. He's your true friend. And thirdly, when you die, he's there to fulfill your rights. There's a deep philosophy behind that. That's why true friends are hard to find. And this is why the hadith also says that if a person sits there and listens, even though he doesn't partake in riba, but he listens, 70 other people backbiting as his punishment. He will be chucked to the pits of hell that will take thousands of years for the bottom to come. If he repents, he'll be the last person to heaven. And if he doesn't, he'll be the first person to hell. Ya Allah, why is it so deep about riba? Why not anything else? Why? Because backbiting erodes the foundations of a society, community. It builds mistrust. Essentially, go back to the first rukun, which was what? Security and peace go. That's not something that we want to go. But then he says, right, here's the issue of marriage. This is to the guys, right? Because the guys in those days were having a bit of problems, it seems like. Because guys, don't marry a woman just because of her beauty. Because you will find that there will be misery in your life. Misery will come. And I've honestly, the cases, you've seen that. Why'd you marry this one? Very beautiful. Misery. Problems. Secondly, do not marry a person for their money. You marry a person for their money, eventually tyranny will prevail. Who should I marry then? Taqwa. Piety. It's God-fearing. Guy comes to you and he says to you, can I marry your daughter? But you're not Iraqi. But no, he has taqwa. You're not Lebanese, you're not Yemeni. You know, from Pakistan. But he has taqwa. And because he has taqwa, I know that he'll treat my daughter well. And I know he'll help her to become a better person. Okay. Maybe I'm going to have to eat spicy food, but still. I can teach him not to have spicy food. We can get around that equation. For example, right, then there's a hadith of the Imam, and again, this is a social point, it's a family point, it's a state point, it transcends everything. Imam says, do good works. But when you do good works, three things should be there. Firstly, hide them. Secondly, quickly do good works. Do not give it a lot of time, because you know what happens when you extend it. Get down to business, basically. And in your own self, see the work as small. This is what the Imam says. He says that what is in your mind will manifest on your tongue. Well, be careful. Manifest. So the other thing is, how's taqwa recognized now? So you know you're trying to find a man, you know, for example, this guy's come for my daughter. How do I know he's got taqwa? What has he got? Imam says four things. Bear in mind. What's the first one? He's mukhlis. He does things sincerely. You could tell, man, this guy's sincere. And he applies everything that he does, everything that he knows. His desires are short, it's not long-term desires. Because remember, you know, it says, the Prophet of God says, I fear for those people who have two things. One, who follow their nafs. Two, who have long desires. What does it mean by long desires? Essentially here it means is that you're so focused on something that you miss everything else. You're in hope of, you know, gaining that Ferrari, let's say. And you're sitting in your house and you're not working for it. And you know, man, 5 years have gone, 10 years have gone. Come on, let's get out and work now. Let's change the course of our life. You know, that girl that I wanted to marry, you know, she's married now. What are you waiting for? Well, there's an imkan, she could be divorced tomorrow. You know, whatever it may be. You know, let's get reasonable now. Don't focus yourself completely on one thing. Focus yourself on God. Because sometimes long hopes and desires shift you away from God. You become so focused on that thing that you forget the main thing. And that is moving towards Allah. What is the fourth thing? And I look, profound. You got three things which you think, okay, that makes sense. Fourth thing hits you. What's the fourth thing? So that, and the person takes time valuably. Doesn't take time for granted. Bang. Now go to any leadership development course, go to any business school. Who's a successful leader, successful businessman, successful? Successful is a person who utilizes time correctly. That's a man going towards perfection. That's a spiritual person. He utilizes time correctly. See the way the Imam brings, again, it's like the point is so modern context. You know, they're teaching that in Harvard Leadership School, they're teaching that at Cambridge. You know, I'm on the faculty for leadership development, and this is the stuff that we teach. We teach leadership to leaders, and we tell them to make sure that your time is. And then you think to yourself, Amir al-Mu'mineen said that, and you think, wow, man, these guys have spent $100,000 trying to develop this project. Here the Imam has given it for free. Nahjul cost 99p for my local shop because they've discounted it. Or £1.99 because some brother in Peterborough decided to discount it from £10 to that. And you think to yourself, man, everything was here. If only I could have opened it up. So I'm going to skip a couple. I'm going to go on to, there's a couple more advices that they were there. But, yes, when it comes to family. It says that mend the ties of the womb. Right. Why? Three reasons. Phenomenal again. Number one, because if you make the move to make better ties relationship-wise, people start loving you. The knock-on effect is Allah has made cause and effect. Illat and ma'lul and everything. You try and remove difficulty and bring people together, especially the ties of the womb, Allah will make you loved by people. Second, your risk will increase. Your financial situation will better. You become extremely wealthy. Have you noticed, right, that some of the most wealthiest people have excellent relationships with their mothers? However, you know, you think this guy's a plonker, as they say, and only fools and horses. You think to yourself, man, Allah's given him so. As soon as his mum calls him, yes, dad, brother, look at the way that the family, Allah gives barakah, money. Thirdly, Allah will increase your life. And fourthly, you'll go to heaven. So, oh my God, there's even more stuff. But you know what I think? Should I call it a day? and open up for questions. There's a lot of stuff to still be said. Unfortunately, I was hoping to cover all of this within two 45-minute sessions. But if not, well, I'll give you one thing, actually. And this is important. You know, it took me aback as well, this tradition. It was a really powerful tradition. And it's for modern times. It's for the era of social media. Imam is giving this tradition, not me. It's the modern day era. He says that Haya and Iman are linked. When Haya goes, Iman goes. When Iman goes, Haya goes. Put in the modern day context. I can go on Facebook now and I'll find somebody winking at me. The brothers don't have the guts to wink at me when I'm sitting here like this, let alone the sisters. But behind a Facebook, everybody's winking and sticking their tongue out. Right? What does that tell you? And it's an example. But get to the point that I'm making, and the point is this. Jibreel, the last time he comes to the Prophet of God, and this is a very serious point, he says, Rasulullah, when I come back to the world, I'll take 10 things away from the people. The final things will be the iman of the people, but before that it will be the haya from the people. Men and women both have a haya in their own, if you contextualize it. When haya goes, eventually iman goes as well. And today when you look at the system, haya's gone. You know, go back 4 years ago, pouting, all sorts of stuff. Even the guys now, you know, they're trying to show the bellies, you know, without the six packs and with the six packs. And, you know, you got all of these things. You know, you go one day, decide to surf Instagram. As much as the guys are naked, the girls are naked. Everything is there. It's there. You're looking at it. What happens? Haya goes. Why is the main thing? Haya. Haya means what then? You have no haya. What's the children you're going to bring into this world? What's the next in line? What's going to happen? This is why there's different characteristics of that. And then, well, now that we're on there, we might as well mention one more point then. It says that on the day of judgment, right, you've got the mizan, right, you've got the scales. Two things, two qualities of iman will help you. One is akhlaq, therefore have good akhlaq. And the other thing is giving. The idea that you give a lot. Sakhawa, the fact that you're giving. That you don't turn anybody away. And there's two things which takes you towards kufr. Now this is, bear this in mind, kufr. Takes you towards becoming away from the faith. Now sometimes people are Muslim but they're kafir. They don't realize that the faith is gone. One, bad akhlaq, and the other one, bukhl, the idea that you're stingy. Phenomenal the way that it's linked in. Stinginess. Final tradition. Again, the Imam says, on the basis of family, he says, spend more time with your wife and children. Focus upon them. And it can't get any more profound than that. Focus upon them. They need your attention. Spend time with your wife and children. And for women, obviously your husbands and your children, and vice versa. Why? Well, there's many philosophies behind that, but one such philosophy is this, that it builds a stronger bond. It also does what? Psychologically, it's very profitable for the children and the family members because it gives them confidence. It makes them feel loved. It makes them feel respected. It makes them feel nurtured. All of these things, human beings require it. If we don't have them, you find that the nucleus is weak. When the nucleus is weak, the community is weak, the community is weak, the society is weak, the society is weak, the state is weak, and so forth. Do you think today in the society we live in is a strong society? Not at all. This is why we have so many problems that we're having. The purpose of Islamic society was what? To do away with insecurities and to have peace and security. If we don't have peace and security, then people are living in fear in some form or other. And you live in fear. You lock your doors up. You're worried that somebody, you put an alarm system on. When you're walking down the road, you're thinking to yourself, well, you know, God forbid somebody mugs me. You're living in some, you know, let's say, some part of the Eastern world. You're worried, man. Well, when's the next bomb blast going to go off? Is a guy going to come with a gun on a scooter and steal my money? Peace and security. How do you combat that? Spend time with your kids. spend time with your family. Thank you very much.